Welcome to the latest episode of Public Power Now. This episode features a panel discussion that took place at the 2023 Northwest Public Power Association Northwest Innovations and Communications Conference, which was held in September in Santa Rosa, California. Officials from Turlock Irrigation District, the Alaska Power Association, and Snohomish County PUD offered their insights on how to start, sustain, and succeed in the world of utility podcasting. With that, please enjoy the episode.
All right, so on to our session. So this is our podcast session called Powering Up the Airwaves, Electrify Your Message with Utility Podcast. We've got a bunch of great panelists and speakers today. I'll introduce them and let them get going here. So first we'll have Paul Champoli. He is the news director for the APPA, the American Public Power Association. Paul's been the news director, or is the news director, and hosts the APPA Public Power Now podcast, which launched in 2020. He has more than 25 years experience reporting on the energy industry for various news outlets. Next, let's have Brandon McMillan. Brandon is the public information specialist at Turlock Irrigation District. We'll bring up Mike Revito. Mike is the deputy director of Alaska Power Association. And then we'll also bring up Kelly Stickney, who is media and public relations liaison for Snohomish PUD. And we'll hand it over. So welcome, everybody, and take it away.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. So I thought the way we could start the conversation is just to get every panelist the opportunity to talk about their, give an overview of your respective podcasts. So, Brandon, do you want to start with that?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. So the Turlock Irrigation District launched the TID Water and Power podcast in May of 2021, and we've been continuing that podcast monthly ever since. The original idea of the podcast actually came from our general manager. And after that kind of initial idea and research and launching, it's really become an opportunity to kind of share TID's story. So in the utility industry, we deal with so many complex issues that we can't fit into a, two-line social media post or anything. So the podcast has really allowed us to dive really deep into, 45 minutes of this complex topic. We can get a little nerdy or a little technical in this realm where maybe we couldn't in other areas. So I mentioned that we've continued this podcast since May 2021. The podcast releases monthly on the second Wednesday of every month. We chose to go with an interview guest style format of it. So our fantastic host of the podcast, Constance, is in the back there. And then I produce the podcast. But we made it kind of audio only. It's available wherever you can get podcasts, so Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. For those here, if you have a sticker in front of you, you can scan that QR code and get the podcast that way as well. And so over time, it's just been the opportunity again to continue to share that TID story. And it's really opened up a lot of new avenues, from highlighting our employees to, again, diving into those deep, complex topics that, normally we can't get customers to kind of get across.
Can I just interject real quick? I think for people who haven't done podcasts, there's probably a intimidation factor in terms of the amount of time you have to dedicate to producing it and whatnot. Could you address that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say the TID Water and Power podcast is a fully produced, edited podcast. We put a lot of time and energy into it. So when we first started, we probably spent about 30 hours of total work per episode. That included creating outlines, brainstorming, having a sit-down prep with our guest, and then the full recording, editing, mixing, and mastering process. Over time, we've found some efficiencies, especially in the editing side of things, being able to improve the way we edit, how quickly we can edit, expedite our review process, and that's kind of brought it down to closer to 20 hours of total prep work, recording everything per episode.
Thanks. Michael?
Yeah, thanks. So Alaska Power Association is a statewide organization in Alaska, and we started our podcast earlier this year. So this is our first year. We are 6 episodes into it. We got a little late start. And the reason that we first considered a podcast was we have a very small staff. And we were trying to figure out what are other ways we can communicate the issues and the challenges and the opportunities and the success stories of our membership and our industry beyond social media, beyond meetings. And actually, a huge shout out to one of the sponsors here, Pioneer Utility Resources, who we work closely with on Rural Light. They came to us and we kind of brainstormed about what could help. And they said, have you ever thought about doing a podcast? And we said, well, no, but I listen to podcasts on my 52-mile drive from my house to Anchorage in the morning. And I thought, what a great idea. And so we started thinking about it internally, and Pioneer helped us set up some sponsorship for the podcast so we could do it. I've never met a microphone that I don't like. And so my boss was like, well, you're the host because you talk a lot. And I was like, all right, I'll be the host. And so we started in, and the whole idea was we really wanted to get the message out to lawmakers in our state in a different way. But then if we figured if we could get the general public engaged as well, that would be a side benefit. And so we started on, we've done kind of like nuts and bolts, how the electric system works. We've addressed EVs in Alaska. We've addressed hydropower. They're 30-minute episodes. It's so easy for me because I literally asked Andy Johns, like, what sort of microphone should I buy? And he told me, and I did what he said. And I record it, and then I send it off to Pioneer. First, actually, after I'm done recording, I have my freak out if I recorded it right or not. And then I find out I did, and I send it off to Pioneer, and they take care of everything. They do the audio, the mixing, and well, I don't know if that's right, mixing or whatever. I'm not a hip-hop artist, but... And then it goes out onto the airwaves. And, you know, it started out kind of slow with subscriptions, but it's been building. And we know it's a success now because we were in Washington, D.C. back in June meeting at DOE. And a couple of the DOE officials we met with were like, hey, I subscribed to your podcast and I listened to it. And we were like, I was like, this is cool, whatever. Yeah, it's cool. But internally, I was like, oh, my God, these people. Because, like, they like, knew what was going on in Alaska, and that's what we wanted to happen. We wanted this to go beyond just Alaska and really have, really have, like, a global audience. And I think it's working. So in terms of time, for those half-hour episodes, I do book one solid hour because I've been finding that some of the people that I interview, as smart as they may be, are technologically challenged. And so to get them to, like, unmute themselves and figure out, like, you know, how to, like, you know, just kind of do it on the computer. It sometimes takes 15 minutes to get going. But, yeah, so it's been a great experience so far.
Hi, so I'm Kelly Stickney with the Snohomish PUD. We started Power Talks in December of 2021, and it's a little bit different than the traditional podcasts because we're a little bit more of a video podcast. We do this every other month now. We started off monthly but changed our cadence to something that we felt was more reasonable for our staff and for our customers. It's a live podcast, is broadcast on Teams, then we record it, send it to our subscribers via email, and then post it on our website. Our topics have changed. We've learned a lot in the last couple of years, including making sure that our topics are not what we want, but what our customers want, which is a lot about energy efficiency, solar, the type of topics that really help people be able to change their behavior at their home or in their business. It's been a great experience. We are committed to utilizing our employees as subject matter experts, which gives them an opportunity to do public speaking and public presenting, which for some folks, like engineers, they may have never done that before, and we're there to help support them in doing that. This year, we started including subject matter experts in our communities, different partners we have, like solar providers, so that we could dig a little bit deeper into some of these topics and spread our audience by being able to use the publicity that our partners could provide as well. It's a little bit different. I think we're going to be transitioning into trying to make it look a little bit more like a podcast without losing that video component. And one of the greatest parts is that we allow for public participation in the end. There's live question and answer. And so far, that's gone well for us. But a little bit scary, but people really appreciate the opportunity to communicate with our staff directly.
Thanks, Kelly. One follow-up question I thought of. What was the thought process or decision-making related to going with the video option in terms of...
Yeah, so I think this was one is we wanted to have that ability to communicate back and forth with our customers. But also, you know, this was one of our, we're just coming out of the pandemic and we're all trying to figure out how to do engagement in this post or kind of still mid-pandemic world. And we'd all been spending a lot of time on Teams. So it just felt like a natural transition.
Okay, makes sense. Thanks. So wanted to switch gears, and we've kind of probably touched upon some of this already, but I want to talk about practical considerations if you're thinking about launching a podcast at a utility. You know, what are some lessons learned that you guys could share with our audience? Brandon, you want to start?
Yeah, so like with any new program or new initiative, planning is incredibly important when going into this. You have to identify what your goals of the podcast would be, who your intended audience would be, and that'll help you determine the format. So I mentioned TID is an interview guest format, but you need to tell your utility's history and you want to go with a narrative format. TID dabbled in that and did a 10-part mini-series celebrating our 135th anniversary last year, telling some of those unique short stories kind of from our history. So that's going to be important. You know, are you going to go audio only? Are you going to have a video component? Where will this podcast be? Do you want it to be on the podcast apps? Do you want it available online? There's a lot of considerations that go into that. One of the things that we've kind of learned was, so we focus largely on interviewing our employees. We allow them to be subject matter experts to tell unique areas. One of the lessons learned is the prep that goes into each of these guests. So for us, we have a brainstorm meeting, we outline, and then we sit down one-on-one with that guest. Every guest is a little unique. They need a little bit of guidance. Maybe they need some, you know, light bullet points. Maybe they don't need their notes at all because we just want them to speak conversationally. So finding that balance of how to interview, and then we've lessons learned on the, you know, editing side of things from my end is, you know, editing quicker, being better at that sound editing and getting a better sound at the end. So that's kind of some practical considerations and lessons learned there.
Let me toss out a follow-up question for you as well as Kelly and Michael. I think one thing that's important to think about podcasts is you may decide a specific format, but you're not necessarily going to have to be locked into that, right? So you may decide, okay, we're going to do a monthly podcast, but you can always change to, you know, biweekly. Or is that fair to say that this?
Absolutely. So we're monthly. We decided to start out monthly because we wanted something realistic. We always thought we could. If we found that it was quick, if we found that we could find the additional time or down the line got additional staff to be able to do this, that we could kind of increase that cadence of release. But I'm proud to say that, you know, we started monthly, we've continued monthly, we've never missed a release date so far. And then, you know, like I mentioned, we had this short story where we dabbled in this narrative format. It was 100% scripted. It was read by TID employees who aren't used to being behind a microphone, so it was cool for them to get that experience, but then also for us to kind of try a new format and test out. Those were released twice a month for a six-month period. So again, playing with some cadences, playing with release schedules, all things you can kind of identify as you're going.
Great. Michael?
Yeah, I think, and I forgot to mention at the top that Alaska Powerline is the name of our podcast. So if I had done this whole thing and like gone back to my room and forgot that, I would have had to come back and interrupt the conference and told you that. Big thing that I would recommend is get the funds or get the money necessary to buy the professional equipment. The very first one we did before I realized we needed a mic, I just did it over Teams, and it was like very tinny sounding, and Pioneer did their best to, like, you know, make that sound better. But investing in the equipment is important because we want this to be a professionally sounding podcast. We don't want it to seem like an amateur podcast or anything like that. We want it to be authoritative for people who are listening to it and to want to tune back in. I mean, I'm a podcast listener, and I have to say there has been podcasts that I've listened to where the sound quality is bad and choppy, and I turn it off. I mean, it just turns me right off. I won't listen to it. Even some podcasts, and you can't really control this because sometimes, especially folks that I'm interviewing that may be in remote areas, but when the guests call in and it's like super bad audio and I can't hear what the guest is saying, I turn it off. So I guess maybe I'm snobby in that way, like podcast snobby. I want a good good product. The other thing I find is I turn into a bit of a therapist with our guest. And one of the reasons it takes an hour to do a 30-minute presentation or 30-minute recording is because everyone's like so nervous at the beginning, the guest starts like, I don't know. What if I say a lot? Like, what if I don't know what I'm talking about? I'm always like, don't worry, we can edit this. You know, we can go back, we can change things. And then inevitably, when the podcast is ready in draft, I send it to my guest before we ever post it live. And I say, listen to this, please, and let me know if everything's cool. And inevitably somebody will say, I don't like the way I sounded. Can we do it again? And then I turn into therapy, talk you up, boost you up. I say, dude, you sound great. Like, you sound amazing. And I send it to my boss and she listens to it. And if she says they sound good, I'm like, we don't, because I don't want to do it again. Like, I thought I sounded awesome the first time. I don't want to try to like recreate that, right? So some of your guests, you have to really know that. And I mean, everyone I have on my podcast is intelligent. We've had some very intelligent, very well-spoken, very accomplished people who get in front of that podcast and they're like, I don't know, man, right? And they start freaking out. And so I just got to kind of soothe them. And I think that the way I've tried to do that is, I'm like, it's just a conversation. Like, we're just chilling out. I mean, I do go into a podcast recording with a list of questions just in case things run dry. But so often I find we're just like having a buddy conversation. And I think listeners like that better instead of like the stilted kind of newscaster type of interview. It's just like, you know, two friends hanging out and having fun. So I don't know if that got around to, and we do a monthly, and just for the same reason that you had mentioned, we started the monthly in case, like for like a safety valve, just in case with our other workload, we weren't over committing ourselves. After this year, I like to explore perhaps going twice monthly. It just kind of depends, because once we get in the legislative session, we tend to get very, very busy. But there's always room for switching it up. And sometimes your friends can be your best word of mouth. Like, I have friends who I like basically like force them to like subscribe, and then it increases your subscriber base, and they might talk to their friends about it too. So force them on your friends and family also.
Kelly?
Yeah, so I want to echo the point about having it be conversational. When we first started, it was really more of a presentation, and then at the end it was any questions, and the answer was no. And so we decided that wasn't working, so we decided to be more conversational, less prepared, more questions. That really started to work. And don't be afraid to have fun. Last holiday season, we did our podcast on different energy efficiency gifts that you can recommend and buy for your friends and family. We had different employees dress up as elves and come on and talk about gifts. We also, the idea was our host, Aaron Sweeney, was going to be Santa Claus. And I was co-hosting with him that day, and I was going to be an elf, but I thought it would be much funnier to surprise him in the office Michael Scott Phyllis way of also being Santa. And Dula, it was the first podcast that we heard back from our customers. Wow, I really enjoyed that. I learned a lot, and it was really fun to see my utility be humans and have fun and make a connection with us as humans. So have fun and yeah, don't be afraid of that. Utilities are fun, right?
Exactly. No debate here on that. So yeah, one thing I wanted to mention in terms of when I record my podcast is I'll always tell the guests before we hit the record button, if at any point you want to stop and rephrase an answer, we always give you that option. I've done more than 100 episodes now, and I can count on one hand the amount of times that people have had to do that or have requested that. But I think that that's a good mechanism in terms of putting people at ease, just to know that they have that as an option. So wanted to stick with the topic in terms of preparing for a podcast, kind of dig further into in terms of costs. So as you know, there's a lot of smaller co-ops and public power utilities. So putting aside the question of time commitment, obviously front of mind is the financial commitment. Can you guys talk about that a little more?
So Michael mentioned, you know, making that investment from the get-go on kind of professional audio equipment, and that's what TID did. So we converted an old unused storage room into our podcast studio. We did acoustic treatment in the room and really set up as a professional studio. In total, including our professional mixer and professional studio quality microphones, we spent about $2,500 out the front. I will say that that investment has gone beyond just the podcast. We've been able to use the studio for photos and video shoots. We've been able to use the studio for voiceovers for videos and get that kind of professional level quality audio across the board. For some of the ongoing costs, we host on a platform called Buzzsprout that allows us to get on all the different podcast directories. That's $12 a month. That's been kind of the lowest tier. That's been plenty for us for now, you know, nearly 2.5 years. That being said, to get a quality podcast, you don't need to dive all the way into the $2,500 level. So we're at the NIC. So I'm going to give a pub for the NWPPA Bulletin. August 2022, I wrote an article about how to start a podcast, gave some tier options on different different audio levels, different microphones by name that potentially you could be using as simple as a laptop and plugging it in via USB. So there's some options there.
Quick follow-up question. So my sense or my guess is that once you're up and running, you're not going to be facing kind of ongoing upgrade costs, right? I mean, it's pretty, once you're up and running, is that accurate?
And it depends on kind of where you start. So we started kind of what we would consider top of the line. Okay. So there's no real room for us to, other than maybe you have to replace a mic cable here or there. We kind of started there. If you start at a, you know, lower level, maybe after a year, you want to say, okay, we want to take this up a level, improve or invest in some new microphones or a new mixer or a new platform that allows us to record differently.
But not anything that's going to blow up your budget.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Michael and Kelly?
Yeah, we did ours kind of on the quasi cheap, I would have to say. So we didn't create a studio or anything. My office is generally fairly quiet. My house is even quieter during the day, assuming the kids are at school. The only thing that like freaks me out if I'm recording a podcast at home is my dog's going to bark. And sometimes I'm like, maybe we just leave it in there as like an interest piece, but I don't know how that would go over. I think our microphone, we bought a Shure MV7. It was about, it actually was on sale, 33% off at Amazon when I found it. So it was like 200 some bucks. We used the Riverside platform for podcast recording. That's 150 a year. But, and I know this is different for everybody, sponsorships, sponsorships, sponsorships. If you can find sponsorships for your podcast, like, so our contract with Pioneer Utility Resources, which I have no idea what that costs because I stay away from the money. They won't let me near it at APA. But Genpak, who's also out there in the hall, Genpak sponsored the entire year of podcast. And so for us, we intend to fund the podcast, you know, kind of program out of sponsorships. I know that's different as a statewide, as a utility, but if you're an electric utility that has something, you know, they can create a program. Maybe there's a farm equipment store that wants to advertise. If you can have some sort of neutral advertisements that can help you pay for this, it really helps take the bite out of it. Because our budget at APA, it's a healthy budget, but it's not such that we can have thousands upon thousands of dollars dedicated to a podcast. And so we've been very fortunate that we've had a great sponsor this first year with Genpak, and we hope that they continue. But if not, we have some companies kind of in the back pocket that we'd approach to, and it's right at the front of every single podcast. There's a Genpak advertisement that we read, and that carries over every podcast, and then it directs people to their website, and they're happy with it. We report to them occasionally what our listener numbers are, just so their marketing department knows kind of what they're getting for their dollar, and it's been a great relationship all around.
Yeah, so we were in the lucky position to be able to figure this out without having any budget at all, which we were able to do. So we've not spent any money on producing or the podcast. We're lucky to have the very talented Krista Rasmussen, who's in the room back there, who edits all of our podcasts and builds our decks in Canva. But it hasn't cost us anything. Now we are looking into the possibility of maybe purchasing some mics to move into some more formal podcast venues, but we've, by not spending any money up front, we've had the opportunity to prove the concept and make sure that this is something that our customers are really interested in before making any additional financial investment.
Can I add one thing? I would just say something about the microphone. The microphone is a fascinating thing. Some people fear the microphone, but the first episode I did, I just felt like, you know, kind of lukewarm. But when I got the microphone in front of me, maybe this is just my weird thing, but like I felt like real, like I was really doing a podcast. I had it in front of me, had my cool headphones on, I could see myself, and it was like in the, we don't do a video, it's audio only. But for some reason, I felt like it made me a better podcast host because I felt like I was like straight up there. I was on the par with, you know, I mean, I'm going to take, Joe Rogan's going down at some point. My podcast numbers are going to exceed his, but just, it's, and I mean, it really does make your voice sound better because I have some friends who are TV news reporters who like talk totally different on TV than they do. And I talk different on a podcast. I mean, I listen to myself, I'm like, dude, why am I talking? But I just do. It just puts you in the frame of mind. It's just fascinating.
Well, I wasn't going to share this story, but I mentioned this to Cameron. You brought up dogs in your house. And I learned a hard lesson of, I have two dachshunds that I didn't realize they bark at pretty much everything that moves in our neighborhood. And so, of course, I'm one of my first episodes, I'm in our bedroom, and I've got everything set up, and I'm ready to record. And literally, like clockwork, the dogs start going nuts just as we start recording. And so I had obviously profusely apologized to the guest. And so since then, I've learned the hard way, always go to the office to record. So for those who are thinking about launching this and you have dogs that bark all the time, that's kind of a warning for that in terms of where you're going to be recording. So just wanted to switch gears here and talk about, and we've already covered some of this, but could you go into more in terms of your strategies you've implemented in terms of developing engaging podcast episodes?
So it's been mentioned a couple times already, but keeping things conversational, it's the biggest thing that we kind of try to impose on our guests. We tell them, you're the expert here. We want to hear from you. How would you explain this to, just anyone else? Sometimes the microphone can be intimidating to them. We've had people do great on video, and as soon as they get in the podcast, they've froze, or in the studio, they freeze up. They're like, the mic's hanging in the front of their face. But getting that conversational, natural feel out of it. For us, Constance, she hosts the podcast. She does a great job of hosting the podcast, and she does a great job of kind of bringing that natural aspect out of them. So that's one of the ones. One other thing as far as kind of strategies and something that we've kind of adjusted over time is the length of the podcast. Mm. So I think Michael mentioned that theirs are 30 minutes long. Mm-hmm. Ours were between 30 and 45 to start. But as we've gone on, they've gotten progressively longer. And we have multiple now over an hour. And we haven't really seen a drop in that listenership over time. So that's been interesting that we can still get that full message across, all the information we want to get in the podcast, and not lose the listeners over that longer time.
Just real quickly for all of you, in terms of interacting with guests, how often do you have experiences where the guest may say, okay, am I arbitrarily cut off at 30 minutes? Or do you have to kind of allay concerns about timing where people don't feel like they have to look at the clock?
So we have no clock in the studio. They're kind of in this own little world.
Right.
But we always overestimate our record time. Okay. We've had some times where we've had guests have to run upstairs for a meeting and then come back and we finish at the end of the day. But for the most part, we typically book over what we expect to record just to create that cushion for sound checking, if there's any, pauses that we need to take. So that's been our...
So what's intriguing to me is also you mentioned that you haven't really noticed any differences in terms of the longer the episode runs in terms of engagement. From a podcast industry perspective, how normal is that? Because I've always had the sense, anecdotally, that the longer, there's like this cutoff where if an episode runs like 45 minutes, then you lose engagement. But it doesn't sound like that's accurate.
We haven't seen that for the TID Water Power podcast. I think it depends on your topic. It depends on your guest. If a guest or a topic isn't engaging, they're going to drop off anyway. But I think that's where it's important to, you want to create a podcast that you want to listen to. So finding the right host who's going to be energetic about it, finding the right topics, and not all of our episodes are a hit. Some of them don't perform as well as others. But again, just finding a podcast that you're going to want to listen to, that others are going to want to listen to, that it's going to reach your audience, that you're targeting, I think is really important.
So at the beginning of the year, I sat down and I wrote out 12 topics for each month. And that was mostly so I didn't panic about not having something to be a topic. But have I stuck to those 12 topics? Not necessarily. Sometimes things have come up. We get a lot of our ideas for the podcast from things that I think the general public might be interested in. But sometimes if we see information out there that is not accurate, we'll find someone in our membership to get on the podcast so that we can kind of counteract that. I will say we've had some crowdsourced topics where people in our membership have said, you know, you should really do this. And I'm like, well, you're my subject. They're like, no, not me. I don't want to. I'm like, well, then don't suggest it, right? I think, you know, to stick with 30 minutes, what my approach is I put my iPad next to my screen and I start a timer. And then I just try to be real good at molding the conversation so that when we get to like 28 minutes, we're just ramping it down. And that is, I mean, our contract with Pioneer is for 30-minute episodes, right? And I find that that's probably 30 to 45 is healthy. When I talk to people, no matter who they are, about the power industry, even people who are interested, it seems like after about that amount of time, they start glazing over, right? And sometimes you can simplify things only so far, and you have to get a little technical on some of these aspects, and that gets hard for people to listen to. I will say a good thing about Alaska is, like, for us to drive 5 hours is like nothing. So people are on the road constantly. And generally, you're on your podcast, right? Sarah knows. Sarah drove 6 hours just to get to the airport, right? And podcast, I mean, I listen to a full episode, hour-long episodes on my way into Anchorage every day. And so you have a captive audience. I think that's very helpful. The commuters that, I don't know how people listen to podcasts and work out. Like, I'd probably trip over the curb or something if I was paying too much attention to it. But yeah, just like kind of having that planning, because then if there is a dry month where like nothing much is happening, I got some topics, I just go to the well, and then easy peasy, there they are.
So our podcasts typically go about 15 to 20 minutes of the actual prepared content. Then that extends to maybe 30 to 40 minutes, depending on the amount of engagement we get from our customers. The better we do at choosing topics, the better the engagement is, and the better the conversation is for everyone. And we allow customers to either, they can turn on their mic and ask the question directly, or they can put it in the chat, which is a lot more comfortable for many customers. It's also, though, been a great tool for our employees. We do these live at noon, the third Thursday of every other month. And our employees, as we all know as communicators, are some of our best tools in getting the word out in our communities. So giving folks who may not want to read a long article in our newsletter the opportunity to listen and watch is really valuable in engaging them as part of our ad hoc communications team. So that's been really, really valuable for us as well.
Great. Want to talk more about metrics in the context of how often or how formal do you have a process where you're looking at metrics for episodes, and what are the lessons learned that you utilize to maybe kind of focus on different areas of topics?
So the biggest metric that we track, and I think is kind of the industry standard for kind of audio podcasts, is downloads. It's kind of the equivalent of you download into your phone or a listen. So we set out with this goal because podcast metrics are kind of arbitrary or kind of unknown across other podcasts to try to compare. So we set out with, you know, we wanted 100 downloads after the first 90 days. When we first launched that, we blew it out of the water. So at that point, it was, you know, figuring out, okay, where are we going to fall now? So we track our metrics, or I track them. So a week out, kind of the first 7 days, we track those metrics, and then month to month, those total downloads. So now what we're seeing is, now that we've released 20 or 29 episodes of the podcast, we're seeing a lot more folks discover the podcast, go back in the catalog and listen to those. So what we estimate as kind of monthly downloads is now kind of going up and up. So we use that. And then, I mentioned we use Buzzsprout to track those downloads. Then we go to kind of go platform by platform to see where folks are listening to the podcast, how long they're listening to the podcast, identifying maybe areas where they may be dropping off or coming back. So we're kind of always adjusting based on that.
So when we first got into this, we kept our expectations realistic because I knew that the first time I asked for, and Pioneer provides us with our analytics, the first time I asked for it, it wasn't going to be 10,000 downloads, or it was fairly low, and I knew that was going to happen because, you know, we're a podcast in Alaska about electric utilities, and we don't have any sort of like national branding. I wasn't invited on Good Morning America or anything like that. But keeping it real, I knew going in, and my boss and I both knew this is going to start out small. So that way I wasn't disappointed. I wasn't, you know, down on myself about, boy, aren't we doing it right or something. And over time, it's slowly grown. And some of that is our promotion of it at our events, you know, and through the regular promotion channels. But a lot of it has been word of mouth. I mean, people hear about it and they'll say, oh, you should listen. Or they'll say like, yeah, I told my friend who's thinking about getting an EV that you should listen to your EV podcast. Right. And suddenly people are just spreading it out. Now, is it a huge podcast in terms of listenership? Not right now, not at the moment. And I think, you know, I'm trying not to be like, have to have a viral moment to be, you know, I don't want it to be me like, you know, vomiting on the podcast or something is what gets it over. But I don't quite have the answer about how you could build it big. Right. And so I think just knowing what the purpose of your podcast is and accepting that it's probably going to start out and be pretty small for a while. Until things catch on. It might depend on where you are. I mean, if you're in a very, very populated area with a more engaged, consumer base, you might have a quicker time. But in Alaska, we have a little bit of a slower time punching through, I think, because, you know, it's just the nature of the state. There's fewer people and people are busy in a lot of places preparing for winter or whatever they're doing. So I think keep your expectations kind of reasonable in that, you know, I mean, I thought maybe one day I could just quit my job and be a full-time podcaster, but it's, I think I'll be retired by the time that happens. So keep it real is what I'm trying to say.
So obviously, since we're doing this live and it's on video, our metrics that we're tracking are a little bit different. We're tracking the number of customers that are signing up. So we're tracking between employees and customers to make sure that we're aware of both of those numbers. And then we track how many people that have signed up actually attend during the day. And then after, when we send out the email and post it on Facebook and our website, we're looking at video views and open rates for those emails to see what our penetration rate is in those areas. Thankfully, we have seen growth, and we can really tell when we, you know, knock it out of the park on a topic. Recently, we had 70 people actually attend the live podcast, which I'm sure, I know maybe 70 doesn't sound like it's groundbreaking out of the number of customers we have, but it's very often that if we have a in-person meeting on like the integrated resource plan, we're not getting 70 people in a room, right? So this is meaningful. And the fact that they're engaging with us is, it's an extra level of engagement that I think adds a little bit of extra points to those metrics.
Can I add, I think about how people are persuaded on something, and people are usually persuaded by those who are closest to them, right? Their close friends or family. Strangers won't persuade you. So, you know, if you had 70 people that heard something on there and then they go tell their network of close contacts, those people are going to believe what those people said. And so suddenly this is blossoming. And so, you know, lower listenership isn't necessarily a bad thing just because of how people are persuaded on information and facts.
Right. And as I was hearing your responses, one thought occurred to me is that if you launch a podcast, maybe don't obsess over things like metrics, because this is could be viewed as one more tool in the toolbox in terms of engaging with your target audiences, right? Does that sound fair to you?
Yeah, I would say just setting those realistic goals, and you know, you can always adjust those goals if you're seeing a spike somewhere, but you know, it's a new initiative just like anything else. So you have to set goals, compare to those goals, and then adjust from there.
And figure out a way to bring your boss along too. I mean, if that one thing that made me a little bit nervous was when our sponsor once, like the first time they said, hey, can you tell me how many people are listening? I thought, oh boy, right? Like, what if they don't like it? What if they think it's too low? Luckily, we have a good relationship with them, so they didn't. But if you're proposing a podcast to your boss, figure out a way to let them know, like, hey, boss, this isn't going to blow up huge at the beginning, but here's why we're going to do this, because you know, some of our bosses are, right? The bottom line, like whatever, you know? And so they're going to say, well, what the heck? You've only got 7 listeners on the last episode. I'm pulling the plug on this thing. and it could happen. So take that time to figure out a way, and everyone's boss is different, to figure out how, there's no one way to convince your superiors how to do something. Figure out how to manage their expectations too.
And I would say, go on.
And just like there's no one way to convince your superiors, there's no one way to reach your customers. And this is a really original tool that, you know, these might be customers that don't read a newsletter, that don't open their bills, that don't watch television to see your ads. And now you've reached them in a way that's very specific to them. For those of you who love podcasts, you know your podcast people, right? And that might be the only way that we're reaching those particular individuals. And there's value in that.
And you may find success outside of metrics. So one of the things that was unintended, that was a big success, was how many TID employees listen to the podcast. So it's been an opportunity for, so TID, we serve both power and irrigation water. So those two sides of the house don't always talk or know what the other side's doing. So it's been an opportunity for the our employees to learn about other areas of the district or learn about important issues that they may not be familiar in their day-to-day. And it's been a really big success that we did not plan for.
Great. So Brandon, I did want to take the opportunity to give you the chance to talk about the handouts on the table. I thought it was an interesting backstory to that. Could you tell people about that?
Oh, the stickers. Yeah. Right, so yeah. I will say that this was not an original idea. I believe at the NIC in 2021, someone had podcast stickers and I was jealous. So came back, you know, that was one of the new ideas from the NIC, was giving you podcast stickers. So we came up with this idea to put the QR code. Obviously, QR codes are back now after COVID. So put the QR code on there, show folks where they get the podcast. And then it's also cut out, so you can grab just the artwork and put that on your, you know, water bottle or wherever else you wanted to, if you didn't want the full design on there.
By the way, I'm taking that back to Alaska and stealing it from you now, too. So
we are
stealing.
Also.
So wanted to leave some time for some questions, but I wanted to kind of wrap things up by giving you each an opportunity, and we're obviously biased in terms of what we see as the benefits of podcasts. What's your elevator pitch in terms of people who are here thinking about launching a podcast in terms of the benefits that flow from that?
It's really just a new opportunity to reach out to your customers in a very new, unique way. I think, you know, Kelly mentioned she would never have, you know, 70 people attending a meeting on the IRP. It's a great opportunity to reach out to new customers, to a different audience, potentially a different demographic than you've ever historically reached. And again, being able to talk just a little bit deeper about these topics, whether it's, for us, it's, you know, EVs or renewables or specifically reliability and in California, you know, natural gas. So it's been an interesting opportunity for us to dive into these topics that maybe we don't talk about. One other side of things that maybe across the Californian state is on the water side. No one's ever talked about water rights in California. Early on, we did a water rights podcast, and that's one of our top three podcasts still, because people are so interested in like TID and our historic water rights. What does that mean? And we never would have told that story in a fact sheet or just on the website. It's just, again, putting subject matter experts who would never interface with customers either.
And just real quick, so I'd imagine there's a scenario where you're at a, you know, a community event, and a customer comes up and says, "Hey, tell me more about EVs." You could obviously give an overview, but you could also say, "We did this podcast episode a month ago," and refer back to that, right?
Yeah, and one of the things now we're doing is in the podcast is always referring back to other episodes. So now we're mentioning 3-4 episodes of, oh, if you want to learn a little more about this, hop over to episode, you know, 14 or something. So we now have this catalog of topics, and sometimes it's an update from a previous year. Sometimes it's a standalone topic that kind of is evergreen and keeps on. So it's been a really nice resource to have and direct people to for more information.
I'll say the elevator pitch for a listener is it's a effortless way to get information. I mean, you don't have to do anything with a podcast. You don't have to read. You don't have to pay attention to a TV program. You just have to like sit and listen, which maybe that takes effort. I don't know. But it seems relatively easy. And, you know, it's something you can do on your own time. You can kind of do it in multiple places. I say an elevator pitch for all of you is, in my opinion, it's fun. And I'll say it's fun just because it's fun in general, but even though podcasting is not brand new, I think it's becoming newer in the public relations, member relations sphere. And so for us, it's really mixed it up a little bit. I mean, I'm going to interview a lineman on Monday and talk to him. He's a 40-year lineman in Alaska, and I'm going to talk to him about like what it's like being a lineman. And that's so much, even though I really, really love to write, but it's so much, it's like, it's fun because it's like kind of mixing it up, right? It's me just getting to sit down and have a conversation, record it, and it's something new. It's some approach to PR that's new, and so when things are new, they're fun, and they're shiny, and I don't think the newness and the funness will wear off of it, because it's, you know, I think we have enough time between our episodes, but it's just a blast to do. I mean, once you get into it, it's a fun part of my job.
Real quick, if I could just interject a question. So, thought occurs to me that this could also be used as a vehicle in terms of recruiting people for the next generation in terms of linemen. So, for example, if there's a high school student who listens to the episode about the linemen, he or she may not have ever thought about that as a career opportunity. Do you see that as another benefit?
Yeah, you could, and you could do some shameless promotion. I mean, you've sparked an idea that maybe, you know, you could send that to, we do know some people at the high schools, right? You could send your episode out to kind of target audience and say, hey, by the way, we recorded this neat episode with a lineman, and so if you'd like to, you know, play it for your students or give it out to give them an idea about some sort of other career track, I think it can be very helpful.
I think we've covered the great opportunity to reach customers you're not reaching. You can do this for $0 to a few thousand dollars. So the investment, the ROI is there. And I wouldn't undersell if I was pitching this to my boss that it's an engagement opportunity for our fellow employees. I mean, that lineman you're interviewing now has a closer relationship with your communications department. And that could be extended into all kinds of future areas, which have countless benefits for the organization.
Well, thanks, all of you. Appreciate the time, and I think it's been a wonderful conversation. I'm going to turn it over for audience Q&A at this point.
But yeah, if you guys have any questions, we can bring the mic to you.
Thanks. I know you said to keep expectations low about audience numbers, but can you give us a sense of what you mean? Are we talking 300? Are we talking 5,000? The 20 hours an episode seems like a lot of resource to commit.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think it just depends really on your organization. So when I think about Alaska and what the statewide is trying to do, Alaska Power Association is well known amongst the electric utilities, but we're not so well known amongst the general public who doesn't have a day-to-day interaction with electric utilities. And that's not all bad. I mean, a lot of our work is government relations, and so the general public aspect hasn't been a large part of what we're doing. But that's changing with this podcast. And so I think for our own organization, we realize those metrics. It is a good point. However, if if your utility provides power to a large population area, you might say, and if you're putting a lot of time in. Now, what saved us is I spend an hour and I send it to Pioneer. But if you're doing this in-house, you might have to, adjust your expectations accordingly if you're spending a lot of time on it. But for me, it's a very low commitment of time, actually.
And for us who do spend a little bit more time in-house producing and editing the podcast, we started with the smaller goal of 100 downloads after 90 days. We get those 100 downloads in about a week now. And now we're approaching here, either this month or next month, we'll be at 10,000 total since we launched. So you kind of will find where that mark is. Now we're averaging about 300. And that's, for us, been a really good ROI. Because, again, we're never putting 300 people in a room to hear about a topic.
Yeah, at this point, we're spending about 15 hours every other month on our podcast. Only a few hours of that is the actual editing time. Most of that time is working with the subject matter experts that are employees to get them prepped to do a live video. And that's an investment in itself, that time, so it pays off. I think at this point, we're getting about 150 people a month that sign up to view it, and they're getting that opportunity to engage. We're also, our costs obviously are really low, so the ROI feels like it's there for us.
This one's for Kelly. You mentioned you do the live video podcast now. Have you ever had any snafus, oh my gosh, uh-oh moments happen? I'd love to hear about it.
No, I wish I had a really great story of a snafu. We've a few times forgotten to record the podcast for later. So, but besides that, knock on wood, it's gone really smoothly.
Annette Lovett from Grant PUD. We've done over 150 podcasts, internal only. We started in May 2020 to be able to communicate to our 800 employees. And I'm just giving you a tip. Socks. We bribe our guests with socks that have our main talking head, Danny Combs, his picture on there. So it's a little takeaway, and we have actually people coming to us. We do a monthly planning session once a month, and we're already booked out through the end of the year of people coming to us and saying, hey, we want to be on the podcast.
Oh, I love that. So we have two mascot squirrels, Zip and Zap, that were chosen by our customers, and some Zip and Zap socks. Sounds like a great idea to me. Love it.
Well, I have a question about when you're looking at your statistics, are you able to determine demographics? Like if you're reaching certain segments generationally, is there any way of determining that through the data you're getting?
So for us, we have limited demographic details. We can see by location, which has been interesting. So we've seen that obviously the great majority of our downloads are within our service area. But then we can see, you know, Sacramento is a big hub for us. And we have some folks in Germany who listen regularly for some reason. So we can see location based. We don't have the age demographics or anything like that from our podcast host yet.
Yeah, and ours aren't broken out by demographics. I just want some numbers now.
Yeah, I would love to be able to see that, but we're not able to see that at this time either.
Well, I guess we have time. If we have time for one more question, which we do, I want to ask one. I've heard some interesting things from y'all about that you've gotten more people in the room, so to say, listening to these topics. Have there been any topics that you've talked about that has sparked interest or that has resonated that you really didn't expect? What was like a really unexpected popular story or success that you had?
Yeah, so I have to say, I was a real skeptic about battery storage podcasts we did recently, because I was like, no, that's just a utility wonk thing, right? And I was surprised. It was one of our most well-attended presentations. Folks were really interested in learning the technology and the future of that. So,
our most listened to podcast was about EVs. And I think because there's a healthy skepticism about them in Alaska amongst a group of people because of, you know, we have a limited charging network and kind of how's it going to work in the cold. And so we talked to the utility manager in Juneau, which has, in Alaska, coastal towns with very few road miles are packed full of EVs, right? Because they don't drive very far and they're mostly hydropower. And so the rates are lower. And they talked about the integration of EVs into the electric utility and how they had to prepare for the grid. But then fortunately, the gentleman who runs the utility there is very smart and offered some advice to Alaskans considering EVs. And that's the one we got the most feedback on, was people who were searching. And I did get a comment from one person who said, I wasn't looking for an electric utility podcast. I was looking for an EV podcast. And when I typed in EV, this popped up as a search term. And so he said, I was in Alaska, so I listened to it and I learned a lot. I was like, dang, that's pretty good.
So our top podcast is no surprise. It's our Project Nexus Solar Over Canals project. We piloted that. It's a national story for us. So that's no surprise. It's been the top. But one of the more interesting ones is in our short stories. We chose such unique stories that at one point, one of our board members asked us, were they real? Were these actual unique stories? And sure enough, they're all from our historical, 100-year book. And so that was just a cool, unique thing that, that was a little different.